Ladies and gentlemen, it's a pleasure to welcome back to the Soleri Report, Jason Bawden-Smith, both scientist and entrepreneur. Jason is an environmental scientist with extensive knowledge and experience for many decades now of mitigating environmental risk. He holds his Bachelor of Applied Science in Environmental Health, and he has a master's degree in environmental science. As important, if not more important to me, he's a highly successful entrepreneur. His first book, Making Waves, is a favorite of mine, and he and I discussed it on the Soleri Report. He makes a very compelling case as to the importance of having entrepreneurs solve the problems before us. One of his mottos, which I love, is your complaint is your call to action. Jason is someone who takes lots of action. He built one of the most successful contaminated land consulting companies in Australia, sold it for a pretty penny, and has now started one of a new venture, JBS Technologies, which offers real solutions for harmful EMFs and other related challenges that we face with modern technology. I've wanted to have someone on EMF radiation for a long time, and when I heard that Jason was writing a book, I was thrilled. He's coming out with a new book. I can't recommend it enough. I've been reading it and tearing it apart, called In the Dark, and we'll be talking about In the Dark with Jason and what is EMF radiation, what you can do about it, and here is finally the great book to sort of make sense of this and help you navigate this issue. So, Jason, welcome to the Soleri Report. Thank you so much for coming in all the way from Sydney.
Thank you so much, Catherine. I really appreciate your invitation, and I'm looking forward to sharing some of the findings and knowledge of the research I've done for the new book, and more importantly, spending hopefully half the show going through the solutions so people can have a way to deal with what probably is going to be known as the number one environmental health risk to humanity. It really is that serious.
My theory as to why you wrote this book is that you were trying to figure out how to protect yourself, and the more you dug into it, the more you learned, the more you realized this is very, very serious. And so you decided to write the book. Is that correct?
That is correct. I just want to say a couple of things just to qualify. I'm not an electrical engineer, and the wireless technology and mobile phones, or cell phones as the Americans call them, is really an electronic engineer issue. I'm not one of those, and I'm not a medical doctor. So we will talk about health a lot on this podcast, and I'm not recommending any health advice at all. I'm just speaking my book, which is the impact of the environment on human health. I just want to say that up front. I don't want people to race off and do anything without doing their own homework, speaking to their own health professionals, and getting self-empowered with the knowledge. And hopefully In the Dark is one of the first steps you can take. There's over 100 scientific references within the book. It's actually written at a high school level. It's not, you don't need a science degree to understand it. I've kept it very simple, thanks to the publisher, but we have kept all the links in. So all those people who say, oh, this can't be true, this has got to be crap, there's over 100 scientific peer-reviewed papers referenced in the book. So I encourage people to do their own homework. Getting back to your question, while I wrote the book, there's a couple of reasons. There's two personal reasons. The first one is my mother, Judith, who passed a few years ago, suffered from chemical hypersensitivity and also electromagnetic hypersensitivity. She was literally allergic to the city, and I had to move her to the country away from city life so she could have some decent quality, especially in the later part of her life. And on her deathbed, she said to me, you have to fix these problems. They're really affecting people, and I need you to go off and fix it. Now, if you remember back to our first interview back in February, I talked about the other campaigns that I've been involved in, the beach pollution, the lead poisoning, childhood lead poisoning, and a little bit on the impact of mining. So it was my mother who said, you've got to do the EMF story as well. So that's been something in the back of my mind for a long time. And I know through my experience in risk communication that you can never talk about a problem until you have a solution. You must have a win-win solution. It's not just in managing hazards, it's also business. We need to have a win-win solution. And we talked a lot about that in Making Waves in our other interview, but it's really important, really important people understand that we're not against technology. No, I love technology. I had a technology company and made a fortune selling technology to the mining industry. So I have iPhones, I have iPads, I have Apple computers. You know, I've got technology everywhere. So I'm not a Luddite.
Right.
I love technology. I just want to make it safe. We just want to have safe technology and use prudent precautions when dealing with it. The other reason I wrote the book is I got diagnosed with metabolic syndrome. Now, I've had weight issues all my life. And interestingly, now when I look back at it, the thinnest periods of my life were always when I was outside. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later on. And it wasn't outside doing exercise. I mean, it was out doing field work or when I was a kid, you know, out in the sun, down the beach, et cetera, et cetera. So when I said, why is this happening? I couldn't understand through normal biochemistry what was going on. So I explored biophysics, what's now being called quantum biology. So it's looking at the body from a physics perspective. So we see electrons instead of food. We see all the different light interactions going through your eye. So your eye is looked at as a clock, not just a camera. And we're not going to go too much into the quantum biology today, but that sparked my interest. And as I dug deeper and deeper and deeper, I realized the solution to my metabolic syndrome, for those who don't know what it is, it's being overweight, high blood pressure, pre-diabetic or diabetic, a range of testosterone levels being too low and a few other biochemical processes. And then as I looked at it more and more and more, I found that the secret to this is actually getting back connected with nature. And my whole problem was my indoor living lifestyle. We're going to talk a little bit more about that as we move along. So they're the three reasons: my mother, my own health, and the new discovery of quantum biology. And you may remember back in the other Making Waves podcast, I only told you half the reason I left New South Wales Health Department. So the other reason, which I didn't talk about, is I was so disillusioned. What had happened in the health department is I joined because of the connection between environment and health. We had a public health division that really took that seriously. And then soon after I started, they split that division off and took the kind of environmental part and put it in the EPA, even though they focused mainly on flora and fauna and pollution issues. And health became all about hospitals and drugs. And I just knew this was not going to be successful and I had to leave. So that was the other reason. And this new quantum biology evidence is going to revolutionize health. It's going to have the same effect as all the new brain scanning technology that came out in the 1990s. And we learned about how the mind works and how positive thinking and all those concepts that Bruce Lipton and co talk about, this is going to have the same effect on health. And we might try to convince Solari Report to do more information on it. But I think it's time to move on into technology.
Oh, I'd love to. Well, do we first, I really want to focus everyone's on the importance of light. Maybe if you could just briefly talk about light as food and the importance of light. Because it's from that understanding that you really begin to understand EMF radiation and the importance of reversing it and how to reverse it.
Yeah, thanks, Catherine. I'm going to say that, first of all, we need to look at the EMF spectrum. So I will put a bit of a PowerPoint presentation together with this talk or a few slides, and I want people to go back to their high school chemistry and understand the spectrum. And when you look at the spectrum, it goes from the short wavelengths where cosmic rays, gamma rays, ultraviolet light sit, right to the other end where we get down to microwaves, radio, and other broadcast bands. That's the whole spectrum. That is all EMF. It's one big electromagnetic frequency band. For light, it kind of sits in the middle. And the visible light makes up a very small sliver of the overall band. But it's this sliver that relates to human biology and a lot to nature. So within the visible light spectrum, on one end you have ultraviolet light, on the other end infrared. Now they're both invisible, but they're still part of what we call full spectrum sunlight. And they are both super critical, the most important parts for human biology. And they're the parts that have been demonized or forgotten about. And we're going to go through that a little bit now. Blue light sits around the 500-550 nanometer part of the spectrum. And blue light is part of the normal sunlight, but it's in balance because it only makes up a small component and it's very well balanced out by the red light. So when blue and red are in the same field, then blue light's not a problem. And we need blue light. Blue light's really important for cortisol and a few other reasons. But what we've done is we've taken that spectrum, the blue light spectrum, together with a few of the others, and loaded it up into what we call artificial suns, or what everyone knows as lights. So we moved our sunlight indoors, but we left out the two most important components, UV and IR. And the reason we left them out is because engineers are about efficiency, not about health. So the light engineers want to have efficient electrical output. This is why we've developed the new LED lights for energy reasons. They are toxic to human health. We haven't realized it enough. It's starting to come. We're starting to see the AMA, the American Medical Association, put out some papers on the importance of, I think the paper's mainly about street lights, but it applies to all lights. And I'm going to say now that my metabolic syndrome, which I call blue light disease, was because I spent too much time in the last two decades under artificial light and not getting enough full spectrum light. There are other reasons, but out of all the ones on the EMF spectrum, that's my biggest concern for my personal health. The big statement, especially when you realise that we as a modern society spent over 90 to 95% of our time indoors. The USEPA came out, I think, with a study, it's in the book, and it was, I think, 93% of the lives we spent inside. It's incredible. We are born naked. We aren't born with any clothes and we're meant to live outside. But no, we're too smart for our own good, so we move everyone indoors in comfortable air conditioning, artificial lights, and it's now starting to show up in our biology and health problems. This is going to be a big issue. You're going to hear a lot more about it. So let's talk about two reasons. Why is it happening? Like, how does blue light actually affect the body, just briefly? And then the second thing I want to talk about is, why has the sun been so demonized by society? So what's happening is melatonin is suppressed by blue light, and the light coming off, particularly computer screens and TV screens, is four times as strong. So the colour intensity of blue light compared to the natural sunlight is four times as strong, and it's not balanced out by the red light. So not only is it just blue, it's four times as strong as it should be for our natural biological processes. Now, melatonin is really important because it suppresses or decreases a person's what they call leptin. Leptin's a hormone that regulates appetite. It actually is a master hormone that does a lot more than that, but for weight, which we're talking about today, leptin's really important. So if you're suppressing your leptin, you're never feeling satiated. You're always hungry. Even though you've got all these fat stores, these high energy stores, you're still hungry. So you're consuming more food than what your body needs. You know, basically, blue light makes you fat. Blue light also affects sleep. The main thing you'll hear about, talked about in the mainstream is not only suppresses melatonin, but it stimulates cortisol. Cortisol is that hormone that you want in the morning. It's the one that when you wake up at 4, 5, 6 o'clock in the morning, it's the one that the body's producing to wake us up. But if you're getting cortisol at 10 o'clock at night because you're spending time watching TV or working on your computer, it's going to ruin your sleep. And I don't know how many people you know that have sleep problems, but insomnia and lack and sleep issues is massive. And EMF has a role to play other than blue light as well, which we'll get to later on. So looking at the literature, and you can look at all the studies, but exposure to blue light is going to make you fat, it's going to put you at risk of diabetes, it's going to give you high blood pressure and even potentially lead to cancer. There's a whole host of health stuff we can go through, which I don't think we have time today, which relates to how it ruins the mitochondrial function through these photoreceptors mm-hmm. in our eye and also our skin. And these receptors right. control all growth, all metabolism pathways in the human body. So it's very significant. So what we need to do, and we'll talk about it later, is we need to protect our eyes from blue light, especially at night, but I even wear blue blocking glasses during the day just because of the intensity.
Really?
I do, because it's too strong. I'm even wearing blue blocking now as I'm speaking to you. It's right. about 9:30 in the morning, and I'm in an office building surrounded by artificial lights. Even though I've got full spectrum bulbs inside my office, it still gives off too much blue light.
Right.
And my screens, even though I've got efflux and I've got a sticker which helps reduce the blue light on the screen as well, I'm still wearing blue blocking glasses. Sorry.
Okay. One of the pages that most impressed me in the dark was on page 53. You had Richard Lear's chart on the increase in disease from 1990 on.
Oh, I know.
And it's absolutely stunning.
We'll get
chronic fatigue up 11,000%, bipolar up 10,000%, fibromyalgia up almost 8,000%. It's just, you know, when you read down the list, you realize something very dramatic is going on here.
Yeah, it is. If you look at the original work by Darwin, everyone talks about Darwin's work as natural selection. But if you go back to his original papers, and I did this years ago, he actually talks about the biggest effect on human biology is the environment. The biggest change you ever see in human biology is the change in the environment. And we are going through the biggest shift in environmental change that our society has ever seen in the shortest period of time. And we haven't really understood that because it's all invisible and we're not putting the pieces of the puzzle together. And that's why I've tried to show it in the dark, as I'm putting those pieces of the puzzle together to let you understand that this is a real issue. It's not just the blue light, it's also the EMF, which we're going to talk about in a minute. It's a real issue. And I've been reading articles where teenagers and 20-year-olds are getting dementia. Toddlers right. are getting diabetes. Oh, this is insane. It's just right. insane. Like, and no one can explain it.
I thought. You know, it's a very short part of your book, but it's a very, it underscores the situation, is basically we see the major insurers taking steps to make sure they're not liable for any of this. That's very quiet, but it's a very significant piece of information.
Yes. They've been burnt before. They've been burnt with tobacco. They've been burnt with asbestos. They've seen these environmental diseases causing massive claims. And I'm about to tell you this is going to be the biggest claim that we've ever seen. When the links are made, this will make smoking look like nothing. It really is that big.
Well, I have to mention, there was just a case where a reporter tried to cover this on mainstream TV in Australia. And the story got pulled. It was quite a big brouhaha, but you're seeing more and more of that where investigative reporters who try and cover it in the corporate media get really clocked for trying. So you can see somebody's very worried about the financial risk.
Yeah, let's save that discussion towards the end, because we're going to talk about how it's all hidden and they're being very sneaky, because they have to be. But before we leave light, I want to talk about the sun just a little bit.
Okay.
So if you look back in history, sun was seen as a divine power in many cultures. In ancient Egypt, in Greece, in Arabia, the sun was seen as being divine. It was being healing. So how do we go from being a kind of divine healing power, the source of all life, to being classified as a class one carcinogen by who? So UV light is classified as a known cancer-causing chemical. This is insane. So I had to look at this. I don't understand. How did it happen? So I want to mention it. So heliotherapy is the technical name for using sunlight to heal. And if you're interested in reading more about it, Light Therapeutics by Dr. John Harvey Kellogg is probably the best book for the history. And he talks about, I think it was in 1903, a Dr. Fenson won the Nobel Prize for using UV light as a medical cure. And his work led to this Switzerland doctor called Auguste Rollier, and he became the master of this modern heliotherapy in the early 19th century. And he was treating tuberculosis, not just the skin condition, but the underlying manifestation of the disease. And he would basically, you know, gradually adapt a patient's exposure to sunlight and cure a whole host of disease. He's written textbooks on it. You can look it up. And the most interesting thing that I read was after 50 years of research, Dr. Rollier specifically mentions, like kind of nearly underlines and highlights it in the very last textbook he wrote, that he never saw a skin cancer caused by the sun or heliotherapy. And in fact, he treated skin cancer with sunlight. So what the hell happened? How do we demonize the UV aspect of light? Why is UV light so evil? Well, it's hard to find, but if you go to a book by a guy called Dr. John Ott, he dug down to a paper in 1959 which shows how this retrolateral hyperplasia, which is kind of like a cause for blindness, in a paper where they were using UV lamps, and it affected these children. And that's the paper they used to build the story about the sun being evil. And of course, what happened in the 90s after World War II, Big Pharma got all its power. And the last thing Big Pharma can have is a natural cure for so many diseases being just spending some time in the sun and not taking a pill. Read John Ott's book. It's called Health and Light. It's very, very good if you want to go into the history. But before we leave light, what does it really do? So vitamin D, we hear a lot about vitamin D. It's actually vitamin D3. And it plays a crucial role in disease prevention and maintaining optimal health. There's around 30,000 genes in your body, and vitamin D affects at least 10% of those. And a whole host of other receptors throughout the body. And they now know that vitamin D3 is very important in the prevention of cancer. So how do you get vitamin D3? You get it through UVB rays, the ones they really don't like, where it converts cholesterol in the skin into vitamin D3. So how can a cancer-preventing chemical or vitamin D3 that can only be, unless you're taking a pill, of course, can only be accessed through sunlight, be turned around and say sunlight causes cancer? It's just insane. So in Australia, we have a lot of sun.
But I don't know if you've ever, I don't know if you've ever been in a situation where you're very, very short of vitamin D3. But what you'll see is it's much easier to control people who are.
Right. I didn't know that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Much easier to control people with a severe insufficiency of vitamin D.
Wow. Well, that explains a bit, doesn't it? Because there is such an effort. Like in Australia, we call it the slip, slop, slop campaign. You know, you slip on a shirt, slap on a hat, and slop on some sunscreen. And because of these campaigns and the demonization of the sun, Australians and New Zealanders who have access to a lot of sunlight, about a third of them have inadequate vitamin D. And up to 50% during the summer.
Unbelievable.
I know, it's insane. It's just insane. Because when they go out in the sun, what do? They put sunglasses on so they cover their eyes, and they're always got clothes on, or if they're down the beach, they're putting heaps of sunscreen on. And in the book, we won't talk about it now, but there's some good references showing that sunscreen is actually probably one of the causes of skin cancer, particularly the toxic versions.
Right.
UV sunlight cures your health. It promotes health, it cures disease. And I'm not saying you want to go out and sunbake all day. You definitely don't want to do that, because sunlight can cause squamous cell and basal cell carcinomas. These are the kind of the little lumps and bruises on our skin we get with age. But only 5% ever turn into cancer. Very, very low chance. So we'll talk about sun exposure when we go through the control measures, but I really wanted to put in that natural full-spectrum sunlight is critical to health. Absolutely critical to health.
Okay, so can we turn to man-made EMF and talk through some of the different sources of EMF, man-made EMF?
Yep. So I'm going to give the audience another slide, which is showing the spectrum again, but using pictures to show where different frequencies are used for different technology. So in the lower end, so the easiest way to describe it, and it's really important to understand, is technology uses the non-ionizing radiation section of the spectrum. The ionizing radiation is the nuclear end, right? It's the X-rays, the gamma rays, it's the heavy end. And we're going to talk about how government and the radiation advocates are always said there is no effect from this technology unless it's thermal. Unless it heats you up, there cannot be effect. Well, that's complete BS. We're going to go through why in a minute. So to understand the different types, this electrical engineering subject is a bit difficult. It's quite confusing, and I think you need a particular brain structure and wiring to fully understand it, and I don't have that. But we're going to keep it simple so I can understand it, and if I can understand it, you guys can as well. But it can get very complex, and that's one of the secrets they use to keep us in the dark. So our appliances and power lines live at the very end of the spectrum. It's kind of between 3 and 300 hertz. It's called extremely low frequencies, or ELFs. And you've had a guest on, Sam, Dr. Sam Milham, who talked about the effects of that. So we won't go into too much detail on dirt electricity unless you want to. The second section is in the next band, which is radio waves and microwaves. This is what your smartphones, your wireless devices, your cordless home phones and other gadgets, all the smart gadgets use, and that runs between 3 kilohertz to 300 kilohertz. As you get closer to the end, you get the heavier microwave radiation, which runs from about 300 megahertz to 300 gigahertz, and that's the weaponry they use to cause problems, and we'll talk about that a little bit more as well. So basically anything that runs with electricity has the potential to generate harmful EMFs. The more we're exposed to, the worse it is. So when you're looking at exposure, it's always dose times time. So it's important to understand that. It's not just the concentration or the density of the power, it's also the length of time you're exposed to. Hence why smart meters and wireless phones concern me the most. But let's do a little history lesson. I want to do a little history lesson so we understand, because I'm going to pick on someone who everyone loves, and his name is Tesla, Nikola Tesla. So what happened? like before technology, what did we have? We had the Earth's heartbeat. They call it the Schumann resonance. It was essentially low weak, low frequencies generated from lightning and full spectrum sunlight, and had heaps of visible light and ultraviolet and infrared. But what happened in the 1890s, the easiest way I try and explain to people is most people know AC/DC. AC/DC is an Australian rock band, a famous Australian kind of rock Nelly metal band. And that name was actually one of the reasons, I don't know if it's true because I don't know AC/DC, but it was apparently named after the War of the Currents. And most people don't know that back in the 1890s, there was a dead set war, kind of business war between Nikola Tesla and Thomas Edison. Now, Thomas Edison wanted to use the DC, the direct current, and I wish he did, because DC is what nature uses. So think of a solar panel. A solar panel absorbs the direct current from the sun, and then we put a transformer in it, which is a source of EMF, to convert it into alternate current so we can use it to power our lights and our fridge, etc. But Nikola Tesla said, no, we've got to use the alternate current. So there really was a massive war between the two that people don't understand. Now, Tesla was backed by Westinghouse, and Edison was backed by what became known as GE. Now, the problem that Edison had was DC current is nowhere near as efficient as AC. So when they started developing the companies and the technologies, the businesses noticed that it was much more profitable to use AC. It was so much more efficient. Just like we do with the lights, we get rid of the inefficient, natural, biologically important currents and frequencies, and we go for the ones that save us the most energy and make us the most money. Nikola Tesla won that battle. Now, Edison was a pretty smart dude, so he eventually merged companies, and GE end up taking over the AC world. And I think Westinghouse is compensated to build out the wires and the line. They end up losing those contracts, I think, over time. I think they also got the Niagara Falls Hydro Project. So going back to the original use of electricity, we should have gone for DC because that's what nature uses. Instead, we went for the profitable, efficient AC. So unfortunately, I'm not the biggest fan of Nikola Tesla, and I know that's going to upset everybody, but that's what my research shows. So what happened? We brought electricity into the house. All of a sudden, we started seeing these radio telegraph, the old, you know, remember those old movies where they put a pin inside a box and they'd have these lines and linking all the telephones up. So that was the first sign of people suffering from nerve disorders and convulsion and depression, anxiety, and heaps of other stuff. The bell phone, telephone...
Leukemia grew tremendously from that.
Correct. So we started to see it straight away. We ignored it, but we saw it straight away. And then, of course, after the wars, we decided that we should have radar and start using microwave and radio waves to communicate and to spy on things. And then soon after, television was born, and you go back to the literature, and all the radiator operators were suffering similar symptoms to the telephone switchboard workers. Now, what was going on the other side of the world in the Soviet Union was very different. They saw the same problem, but instead of ignoring it, they documented it. And if you look at all the scientific literature, which is now being translated, one good thing about technology is translations become a lot easier. So speaking Russian is beyond my ability. White man Chinese, we call it. episodes from the mid to the late 60s, they published a heap of papers on what they call microwave sickness. So these microwave sickness, it's the same symptoms, their headaches, the blurred vision, loss of concentration, poor sleep, rah, 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 rah. But they were really concerned about it. They said, hey, we're really concerned about this. And during the middle of the Cold War, they tried to have meetings with the Americans, and the Americans didn't want to discuss it. They just ignored them. So the Russian went, right, let's do an experiment. I think it was actually a wooden clock they gave him as a president, as a present, not a president, as a present for their US embassy in Moscow. And then from 1962 to 1969, they hammered the embassy with 4,000 to 6,000 millivolts of microwaves. It became what is known as the microwave signal. The Russians wanted to make a point. They wanted to prove to the Americans this was a real issue. But the Americans just ignored it for over a decade. And a guy eventually, because they started seeing all these health problems, right, in the embassy workers. So a guy called Milton, I think it was Milton Zarrett, was asked to investigate what was called Project Pandora. I think it was in 1984, you can look it up. There's a documentary called Opening Pandora's Box, where one of my favourite scientists, Dr. Robert O'Becker, who's an orthopaedic surgeon, came out and blew the whistle on what was going on. So here we have the Russians practising their microwave sickness on Americans to prove a point, way back in the 60s. So the Americans eventually woke up and said, okay, we need to look at this. And they did their own studies. They did their own studies through the, what they call the Naval Medical Institute and also the Defense Intelligence Agency through the 70s. And I think even NASA did a study and the US Air Force did a study as well, maybe a little bit later on. And, of course, these weren't published. They're published now, but they weren't back then. And they went on to show exactly the same problems. Problems with the nervous system, the immune system, genes, and we can get right into the biological processes, but we'll talk a little bit more about the biology in a minute. So here we have the American and Russian governments with clear evidence that this is going on. But did we listen? Of course not. We kept going on. So maybe we need to move over to the biggest question I get asked by the antis, and I'm going to get it publicly now. This is my first interview, by the way, folks, and it's probably going to be one of several that I'll be doing over coming months. I'm sticking my head out, and I know it's going to be punched for coming out and speaking about this issue, but I've decided, after careful consideration, that we need to talk about it. We just need to talk about it. It's too important. Too many people getting sick. So the number one kind of way they try and shut us up is saying, show us the biochemical, biological pathway. We need to know the mechanism. We've got no proof this actually affects the human body. Well, that's not true either. And you'll see a slide I'm going to give you as part of the presentation where a great scientist called Dr. Martin Powell, he has shown equivocally how electromagnetic radiation affects what they call the voltage-gated calcium channel. So this is kind of like a channel where the calcium goes in and out of a cell. And if you look at the graph, you can see it's not the EMF itself that causes the problem. It's the shaking of the shell. So you know when you get electrified, you see in the electric chair when people shake? Well, that's happening to us every day, but very subtly. Very, very subtly. You can't see it. Most people can't feel it. But our cellular structure is being shaken. We're getting affected at the very, very root of our existence constantly. And I won't go through the technical data too much, but basically we know when calcium increases in a cell, we get all these free radicals being formed, and it's these free radicals that damage the cell structures and the DNA and cause inflammation and oxidant stress and a whole host of other diseases. And if you speak to the researchers in Parkinson's and Alzheimer's, they know the main cause of that is excessive calcium in the cell. So we're seeing now hard evidence that the biochemical process has been documented. Dr. Martin Powell's research. I really want to stress that. This is front page news, folks. This is really front. They can't say it doesn't cause an effect anymore.
We have the wave of what happens with dirty electricity from the 20s and 30s onward. But then if you look at the numbers on the diseases that I just quoted you, those were basically looking at the 90s on. Mm-hmm. How much of this is really ramped up tremendously with the cell phones and the cell tower network?
It's exponential. If you look at graphs of the rollout of the cell towers, so you go mobile phone or cell phone masts, the actual towers, and you plot that against these modern diseases, the R-squared, the correlation coefficient, is in the 0.9s. It's amazing. Now, I'm not saying that all these modern diseases are caused by EMF. I'm not saying that at all. But I'm saying there's a clear association with it, absolute clear association. And my personal opinion, and I'm not a medical doctor, is because we're getting constantly bombarded. We're getting electrified every day, every moment of every day. It's the Chinese water effect. Tap, 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 tap. Our body hasn't got a chance to deal with the other issues it needs to deal with. And this is why these illnesses are setting in. And because it affects at a mitochondrial level, and we're not going to go through mitochondrial health today, but that's the energy plant within a cell. That's what's being targeted. That's what's being affected. And that's what's it's called heteroplasmy. It's kind of how much mutant DNA, mitochondrial DNA is separate from your genome. So I don't want to get it confused, but it's called heteroplasmy, how much battery power your cell has. And the more disease that gets, the sicker you become, and eventually the cell dies and you die if too many of them, you know, get past their use-by date. So we're seeing
One thing I should point out, if you look at the trajectory of rolling out of the cell towers and the cell phones and the adoption by the general population, that also tracked, particularly in a place like the United States, the rollout of GMO food and the rollout of heavy schedules of vaccines.
Yeah, well, here's an interesting link for you, Catherine. If your mitochondrial cells are not healthy, you can't handle other toxins.
Right.
So you get your mitochondrial DNA from your mother, not from your dad. It's a different DNA. It's just straight from your mother. So if your mother had poor health when she gave birth to you, you're born with poor, let's say unhealthy mitochondrial cells. If you didn't get a jab the first day you're born with thimerosal, mercury and other toxins in vaccines, then your body just can't handle it. And that's where you're starting to get these autism and these other problems. It's not just the vaccine. It's having a healthy, unhealthy mitochondrial system to begin with. Because autism was around before vaccine, so it's not the only cause.
Right.
It's the leaky boat. There's so many. It's resilience. We need to kind of plug all the holes to build resilience. And I think we should talk about it soon. I was going to go into more health effects, but I think we've convinced people enough that EMF is not a healthy thing.
One thing I will say is because EMF radiation is invisible, it's hard for people to realize this is very real and very serious. You know, if a truck is coming at you at 60 miles an hour and it's going to run over you, you know, you can see it, you can understand it. This is invisible, and it really has snuck up on us, particularly because, as I said, it combines with other things which are invisible. You can't see them. And so that's why I thought I was so glad to hear you say this is going to be the number one risk issue or environmental pollution issue, because the impact is so devastating. I think we need to see it, and that's really what you're helping us do.
Well, yeah, so there's two ways to see it, one good, one bad. The easy way is to buy a meter. There's three types of EMF, and I don't want to go into too many details, but you used to have to buy 3 meters, one for the magnetic, one for the the wireless, the RF frequencies, and one for the electric. So now they're called tri-meters. You can get 1 meter that does them all, and they come with sound. People can buy these products in America from Less EMF. It's probably one of the better stores. Jeremy Johnson's site is also wonderful, and he recommends certain meters. So you can measure them, you can test them, and if you have right. the sound on, when you walk into, like I walked into my stepdaughter's classroom, and the beeping it did really got people's attention. So we can measure it. The second way we're seeing it is through disease manifestation. That's the bad way. We talked off air about the rollout of 5G and the addiction of virtual and virtual reality, where we're putting goggles on our face, which is full of blue light, and also RF signals, because that's how we're getting the feedback. We're increasing the power density. We're putting more and more antennas and receptors out. I don't know. I'm not an electrical engineer, but someone told me like every third street light, you need to have some of these devices installed, these little antennas and broadcasters installed. So we're getting massive increase in power density, and we're getting much more physical locations spreading out across the nation. And I think you guys lead the world as a Boston and Seattle. They decided to trial it out first. My concern is that I think our biological bodies are at a tipping point. And when they roll this out and saturate the country, we're going to see a proliferation of disease. Now, humans are pretty strong, and everyone's got different ability to handle different toxins, and we might last a little bit longer. But you saw from the stats we mentioned earlier, this is an exponential problem. This is not a linear. This is not a gradual. This is an explosion. And I think the more and more... I remember Tom Wheeler, the head of the FCC's presentation, I think you posted on the Solera Report. When I watched that, I saw a five-star general saying, we're happy to accept collateral damage. And that collateral damage is our human health. The energy from that was incredible. We're not stopping. We're not waiting. We're not testing. We're rolling this out no matter what. And I was horrified. I just went, oh, my goodness, this is incredible. And they're going to get it out, and they're going to use it not just for communication but for surveillance, for control. I don't know if you want to segue into the kind of really dark stuff, which is all about...
Well, we talk on the Solera Report. Well, let's talk about solutions, because that gets us into the dark stuff. We have a Solera Report on entrainment technology. I talk a lot about it because I'm very concerned that it's used to impact people's or manipulate people in a way that impacts their time and money against their best interests. So I talk about it a lot. But one of the things you do go into, you have really marvelous, almost checklists of what a person can do to protect themselves, but that includes technology solutions.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those is the Blue Shield, which mm-hmm. you introduced me to, and I use both when I travel and here in the house. But I have to confess that once a week I prepare money and markets for the Solera Report. And until I installed the Blue Shield in my house, I would spend the entire... would take me anywhere from 3 to 6 hours to prepare. I would spend the entire 3 to 6 hours angry, because wow. I was covering and researching a lot of very negative things going on in the world. You know, the world is changing and people are getting hurt, and I'm Mama Bear. I want to protect everybody. So I would get angry, and then I loaded the Blue Shield and I stopped getting angry.
Mm. Yeah. The other funny side story with you was when you were out in Australia last year and you're looking at the presentation I was giving to a yoga conference, and I was talking about plants and bees, because it's not just humans getting affected here, folks. It's all the animals.
Right, it's the bees.
And we can talk about the bees later, but you talked about your orchids and how you used to purchase an orchid every
year. Well, that was my favorite thing. I had 32 orchids that had stopped blossoming. You know, for years, all the orchids, I'll cycle them back into the sunroom when they stop blossoming. And it was spring, so we had some natural help. But when I loaded the blue shield, a month later, 30 of the 32 had blossomed.
And I haven't done for a long time.
One of the most
right?
remarkable sights I've ever seen.
Okay, so I'm going to be completely honest here. As a double degree scientist, I don't have enough empirical, scientific, peer-reviewed data to say Blue Shield works. But I have tons of experiential evidence. So
right.
There are lots of pendants and gadgets and all-gone materials, and it's just, and most of them are complete crap. I want to be honest. I looked at them and I didn't like any of them. So I went into the Blue Shield thing being a major, major skeptic. And I'm still a little bit skeptical because I need harder evidence. But I went and met the inventor because I always like going deep. I want to go to the very, very, and understand the technology. And this inventor guy suffers from EHS, and they're the real heroes of this campaign. And now we have some drilling in the background. Sorry about extra noise here, guys. I'm in that office. I wasn't expecting that noise.
It's not too bad. We can turtle on. The can you just explain for the people who don't know what EHS is? It would be very helpful.
Electrohypersensitivity. So these people, their body is just can't tolerate this electromagnetic pollution anymore. So they suffer real symptoms. And like the Russians actually have hospitals now where you go in and they have these shielded rooms for EHS patients. Most of the Western countries, excluding parts of Europe, don't recognize it and they think it's psychosomatic. So whenever there's an issue like this, they bring out all the psychiatrists and the psychotherapists and say, like, it's all in their head, they're making it up. Yeah, their symptoms are real, but it's this nocebo effect. And I'm telling you now, this is not true, because my mother had it and I saw it firsthand.
Right.
Estimates, I've
seen it firsthand.
Yeah, it's real. And lo and behold, is a new documentary that's coming out, and maybe that can be your feature video for this week. And it has the first 20 minutes. I call it the tweeting monks. So it shows an area that has very low EMF in America, which these people, sufferers, EHS sufferers, use to live because they need the low EMF signals for all their satellites and radar for space viewing. And, yeah, it's a very interesting phenomenon. So they call themselves refugees because they can't live in modern cities. I'm expecting this to increase. In fact, everyone here is suffering from a mild version of EHS. Everyone I know either gets headaches, ringing in the ears, trouble sleeping, and all these mild little symptoms that they're not putting two and two together. So I think about half the population are suffering from mild version of EHS, but only 1% to 3% have the real clinical symptoms. And I think it's Austria and the UK have got very good medical practitioners now, and maybe I'll put that in the paperwork that I'm going to give with this presentation, so those who may be EHS sufferers can look even deeper. I'm expecting this to increase with the rollout of 5G. So, not good.
Well, I just got back from a trip driving out to California and back, and I was in areas with extremely high EMF and areas with very low EMF. And I've come to the point where I really can't stay in high EMF areas for very long. And the difference is so noticeable. It's difficult for me to understand how much of it is simply the feelings that it gives you and sort of the impact on your intellectual state to be in the physicality of it, and how much of it is the entrainment. It's impossible to tell.
Yeah.
All I can tell is that it makes it much more difficult to be productive, much, and it's much less pleasant. So now the world is full of cities with people that I love doing, you know, wonderful things that I love. So I'm not going to stop going to cities, but it's clear that the impact on quality of life is enormous.
And it's getting worse, yeah. So let's we talk about pollution.
Well, there's nothing more frightening than turning on your laptop and looking at, you know, 100 options for Wi-Fi. That is very scary.
You got to move. If that's the case, you really have to move. That's like, we'll start talking about some solutions now, but a lot of people look at EMF protection from protecting the body. That's the wrong approach. If you are forced to wear shielding clothing, so they make these clothes out of fine metal, aluminium, and it's quite easy to block a lot of frequencies. And they put it on beanies, and they have a little blanket to wrap around your pregnant tummy to protect your baby. If your EMF levels are so high that you have to shield a person, then your environment sucks. You got to move.
Mm-hmm.
So right. I like taking a different approach. I call it the hierarchies of control in the book, where I want to look at it's hierarchies of control, and I'll put a slide in for the people what it means. But if you want to solve a problem, you got to get it at its source. If I want to clean up a petrol station that's leaking fuel, I've got to get rid of the tank that's leaking. That's my number one thing. I'm not going to start pumping up groundwater and treating groundwater if the source of the pollution is still going on. So we need to tackle it at source. So let's go through a house and work through these hierarchies of control on the things we can do. And then we might spend a bit of time on cell phones and smart meters as specific issues.
That'd
be good, you think? Okay.
Yes, please.
How do we do this? Which is the best way to go? Let's start with a house. Let's walk through someone's house. I think it's probably the best way to do it. It's like I do it in the book. In the book, I give an example of a family who the mother is a scientist by profession, but now she's full-time mother. And the kids have got some issues and dad's got some issues and he works for a tech company. So she buys a meter and walks through the house. And as she's walking through the house, she starts outside because that's where you want to begin, because there could be outside sources that you're unaware of. Those main ones are going to be, are you close to any base stations or towers? Not just mobile or cell towers. We're talking radio and TV antennas, electrical substations, high-voltage cables, and a new one that's just being rolled out now is smart meters. And you did a show on smart meters, but you'd be surprised how someone else's smart meter can affect you. I had a lady who had seven smart meters outside of her living room because she was living in a unit, and the body corporate decided to put all the smart meters in the one section, which just happened to be in her living room. So she's getting bombarded by seven of them. So you've got to look at the outside sources. If you've got a meter, you can tell by watching the readings on the meter. But I can assure you that in Australia, smart meters are pretty much being rolled out everywhere. It's mandated by law. And America, I think, are well and truly underway with their smart meter rollout. I'm not sure. I'm not up to date with exactly the rollout schedule. But let's start with the smart meter. So what are the hierarchies of control? The first one is to get rid of it. So you ring your electricity supplier and say, I've got issues with EHS. I'm getting, you know, health problems. I want it removed and replaced by an old analog system. Or there is other meters they can use, digital ones that don't use any EMF signals. That's the first thing we can do, is get rid of it. Can't get rid of it, you substitute it. And if you can't substitute it, then you have to use engineering controls. And engineering controls include shielding. Now, while I said shielding people is a really silly thing to do because your environment's too toxic, you can shield devices. And if you go to Less EMF in America, because mainly American audience, I know there's some Europeans here as well and some Australians, but you can buy shields. You can just use aluminium foil. Now, shielding is very complicated, very difficult, and very costly if done poorly, particularly if you want to start using shielding paint and all these curtains and all this other stuff. I think it's a waste of time and a waste of money, but shielding a device that you can't get rid of is a good move. Just make sure you test before and after and make sure you're not pointing the smart meter's frequency into your neighbor, because you don't want to hurt them either.
Right.
The last are two aspects of controller, administrative control, which you really can't do with a smart meter. And the third one, we call it personal protection, and that's where I use a Blue Shield. I really think the Blue Shield is going to help a lot of people, but I'd rather get rid of the problem than rely. It's like when you're working in a factory, the last thing you want to do is wear a respirator to stop exposure to the toxic fumes. You'd rather the toxic fumes not be generated in the first place. So when you're getting right down to the last resort, you need something like a respirator or a Blue Shield, but let's start at the top. So that's smart meters. The number one issue we've got is smartphones. Everyone loves them. Everyone uses them. I'm giving away the free chapter on smartphones and the solutions on my website, and I'm even happy to include it as a download on the show notes for you, Catherine, where,
okay,
you know, we could go through today, because I'm looking at the time saying we're already over the hour, so I don't want to go through everything to do with a cell phone. Just please, please, please don't carry it in your pocket, or don't carry it in your bra. Like, if you have a look at the reproductive science on cell phones, oh, my goodness. You just don't want to do that. There's lots of other strategies, and we can go through them now if you want, Catherine, but I'm happy
to...
What about it?
We ought to just mention, while we're at it, an air tube headset, because I think keeping it away from your head is really important.
Yeah, so before I use the air tube headset, I would actually have it on speakerphone and put the phone a good foot away from me. Speakers work really well in the microphones. So, but unfortunately, if you're in a cafe or you're in a public area and you don't want people to hear your conversation, you can use air tube headsets. Don't use a straight wire, because the wire acts like an antenna and takes the frequency into your head. So an air tube has a gap, has an air gap between where the wire stops and the ear tube ends. So the frequency won't travel into your head. It'll still be on your body, but it won't travel to your head. We talked about secret warnings before. If you go to your iPhone or to your other smartphones, they've all got warnings on them. Warnings basically say keep the iPhone 6, I think, is now 10 mil. The iPhone 4 was like 15 or 20 mil. Basically, it says don't hold it in your hand. That's what the warning says. It's unbelievable. They're saying don't hold your phone. And the reason they're saying that, because we mentioned insurance before, is that Swiss Re and Lloyd's have now got exclusion clauses in their policies for smart gadgets, particularly smartphones and smart meters. So they're not covered.
So, right. They have to know a major issue is coming. Do they cover the fires caused by smart meters?
I don't know specific. Like in Australia, when I spoke to my broker, it's a case-by-case basis. They look at the policy. So it's because I was more concerned about, like, our staff. Like, here I am writing a book about how I'm poisoning them, and I don't want to do that, so I'm taking every precaution I can. And it's a workers' compensation issue, which is a government policy issue. So the government insures you for workers' compensation in Australia, and they said so the mobile phones or the light manufacturers won't be sued, because from an occupational point of view, it's the government's fault for allowing to have it in the space to begin with. And there is some legislation coming out of Europe and the UK where EMF has to be assessed in a workplace. It's not in Australia, it's not in America, but it's coming. So you're right, it is coming. Telstra, which is our Verizon or AT&T supplier in Australia, sends out a text message to all the users saying, beware of EMF. So they're covering their backside. I put a photo in the book.
So one thing I wanted to mention, and this is a bit of a question, was I used to travel with a Stetzer meter to make sure I wasn't staying in places with high, dirty electricity problems. And on the Stetzer meter, sort of 50 and below was okay. So my home is, I'll take the Stetzer meter around, and it's anywhere from 20 to 40, but it's well within the 50 range.
Mm-hmm.
So a couple years ago, I was out in Pleasanton, California, and it's the East Bay. Now I stay in Silicon Valley. And of course, it's a high-tech area. And I rented a little apartment, and before I rented it, I tested it, and it was below 50. And then that was during the day. And then what I discovered after I moved in is from I think it was about 8 or 9 o'clock at night till 5 in the morning, it would jump to 1,200.
Oh, my goodness. It was a factory news.
And you felt like you were being fried. And I had to literally call, I called Stetzer and ordered $1,000 of Stetzer filters, because I had to unplug everything and plug Stetzer filters in everything to get it down to 50 so that I could sleep.
Wow.
Otherwise, I mean, you couldn't. It was like being in a microwave oven. It was incredible. I have no idea how anybody lived there.
Yeah. No.
But here I thought I'd been so careful, and voila, what a surprise.
Mm. And just for the listeners' benefits, Stetzer is a good product and it's done well over the years, but I've found better products, and it's actually invented by Alan Marr in the US. It's called AMD. It's called amdesignhealth.com. I'll put it in the show notes. He's an electronic engineer.
You mentioned less EMF.
Yeah, this guy's separate to that. He's like a grounding electrical specialist. And his equipment, I saw a very technical presentation by an industrial hygienist who compared all the products, his products were exceptional. So I haven't spoken to him personally. I plan to do that, but it's the best I've seen. It's just like we get better and better all the time, and Alan's done a tremendous job in, custom grounding, and he's even got different RF kind of antennas that filter the RF frequency, so they actually absorb it. So he's doing some really cool stuff, and I've spoken to a couple of people who use his products, and I think for magnetic fields, which is the dirty electricity fields, I think his products are probably going to be the best. But there could be others. I don't know everything. And the fact that you're listening to this and reading the material and is a good start, and you can do your own research, and you may find stuff that's even better.
It is a great start. Now, one of the things I want to emphasize is that your book is very practical. It's very well organized. It's easy to read. And a person can take it, apply it to their life, and start to really take action in many practical ways. And, of course, there's terrific source material and resources if you want to dive deeper into the different sections, the different areas. So describe to us, Jason, how we can get the book, how we can find you on the web, and how we can continue to follow your work. And then tell us about JBS Technologies and what you hope to do with it.
Thanks, Catherine. The other thing I'm going to put in the show notes for you just before we finish, because there's so many other solutions that I want to go through that we don't have time today, it's what I do. So in the book, I put a section in all the things I do to deliver what I call a high quantum yield, how to get the electronics in my body working most effectively. So I'll put that in as a supplement into the show notes as well, because we just haven't got time to go through all the things that we do. And, you've got to get rid of your Wi-Fi and hardwire all your computers. You've got to get up early in the morning and, get some morning sun. There's a whole lot of stuff in the book. You better find the whole book, but those who don't want to, I'll include what I do, which is kind of, I think, one of the best parts of the book, because it's just practical experiences on how to change your life to suit things. So the best way to contact...
Can I just point out, the most fun you could have in life is to be at your place, get up every morning, go jump in the ocean in Sydney, and then sit on the patio and have a magnificent breakfast overlooking the ocean. Yeah. So you do get up early, and I must say your first 2 hours in the morning are some of the most fun you could have in the world.
Well, the reason I do it, it makes me feel wonderful. Like it's kind of like a natural drug. People just don't understand how it makes you feel. You're just so alive, and you're going, why do I feel so alive in nature and so unalive in the city office? Well, I think we've explained that today. So get out. Like exactly. I end the book by saying, I don't care what invention we come up with, what the next blue shield is, what the next decimeter is ever going to be. The number one solution is reconnecting.
Go hug a tree.
Yeah, go hug a tree. Go and hang out in the sun in the morning especially. Drink plenty of spring water, not fluoridated water. Eat lots of seafood because DHA, which you can get into, is really important. There's lots of stuff you can do that costs absolutely nothing. It's free, and it makes you feel wonderful.
Right.
And if you can't go to the beach, go to the bush. Go into nature. Walk around the park without shoes. Grounding's really important, but we'll stop there because we'll talk all day about what you need to do. So my new website is www.jbstech.com.au. AU is the extension for Australia, Splash of Gold as we call it. I haven't fully decided what I'm going to do with JBS Technologies, Catherine. My life as an entrepreneur gives me so many exciting things to do. It's hard to choose. But I'm definitely going to keep JBS Technology as a major hobby. I don't know if I want to have another big business with lots of staff and technicians and so forth, but I'll definitely have lots of information. It'll be a very active blog site. Right. I will be on Facebook as much as I don't like it, and probably Twitter, just to get the message out. I'll be doing lots of podcasts, doing lots of interviews. Hopefully there'll be some articles written about the book and what we're doing. And I really want to build an army of angry mothers. If there's one group the establishment does not like is an angry mum with a problem in their child that they cannot fix. They are fierce. And I want to build an army of them. Because with that, we're going to get the political change that we need. So jbstech.com.au is the best website. I'm just updating the website right now. Tom, this goes live. It'll be ready. The book is out. You can get it through Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all other bookstores. It's an exciting time to be alive. It sounds really scary. We didn't even get into the real scary stuff because we ran out of time. But Catherine does enough of that on Solaria already.
I want to take some time to mention one other thing, another opportunity for those who would like to meet you, and that is that you and I are cooking up an event for 2018.
Yeah, the ultimate Solaria circle, I'm calling it. And and the reason I say that is the effect it had on you lives with me forever. I've never seen, I have my own personal experiences there, so I know what it feels for me, but seeing it in other people and how it changes, it literally changes their life.
This absolutely changed my life.
Yeah.
Absolutely changed my life. You never look at the world the same from this on. And that is, I went last year to the Australian Outback with you. And it was quite a fun trip because it took me 4 days to get the first flight. We had terrible weather in Dallas where I was changing planes. But we finally got through. We went to Uluru in the Australian Outback and spent 4 days basically exploring what the Aborigine culture tells us about where we come from and our relationship to the stars and the galaxy. And it's the most profoundly important introduction to our real history that I've ever been privileged to receive. It was remarkable, and I can't thank you enough. But what we're planning to do is doing it in May 2018. We're going to try and organize an event for a small number of people to come. It'll be offered to the Solaria subscribers first, and then open to the public if we don't fill it up. And we now have a commitment from Richard Dolan, who's going to be one of the speakers, and So you'll be spending 4 days with Catherine and Richard and Jason, and it will be, I think, just a remarkable time.
Yeah, I always say, why am I doing this? I'm doing this because people need to feel it. They need to experience it. And the work that you've done, Catherine, and all the Solari team has changed my life and helped me so much understand the big picture, what's going on in the geopolitical arena. And I know we go off world a bit with Solari, and I've got my own experiences with that. We can't talk about it publicly, but we can definitely share them at Uluru.
Right.
Now, Australia is the oldest continent in the world, and the Aboriginal... Continue.
You go ahead.
I was just going to say that Australia is the oldest continent. We have very weird animals. We have a lot of desert. It's very unique, especially, particularly for Northern Europeans and Americans who want to come. And the connection you have with the land, with the people, and most importantly, with the Milky Way and the galaxy and the stars is incredible. I really encourage people who want to come. How are we going to do this, Catherine? Expressions of interest, and then if we get enough expressions of interest, I'll put a landing page up or something like that to take deposits.
Yes. So anyone listening to this, feel free to just post something on the website or send something to customer service or ask Catherine and let us know if you're interested. It'll be May 2018. And 4 days approximately in the Australian outback, and of course the flight over and back. I think people will be responsible for their own flights, and we'll just arrange the Uluru part. And Richard has agreed to do a speech in Sydney, so I'm assuming we'll fly through Sydney. And I just have to say it's something I'm very much looking forward to, because as Jason said, you have never seen the Milky Way until you've seen it in the southern sky. And I'll never forget seeing the rock formations, Jason, and realizing, you know, we're children of destiny.
Mm.
We have a destiny, and we have a connection to the stars.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a way of finding our power again. It's a remarkable, remarkable experience. I can't thank you enough for making this available.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, that's it, Jason.
It won't be cheap, because getting there and doing the tours is expensive. So expecting around $3,000 or $4,000 for the trip itself, that does not include flights.
Right.
And if I was coming to Australia from America or Europe, I would definitely stay a bit longer than the Uluru trip. And I'm sure we can find a travel agent to help with flights if you want to go to the Barrier Reef, or you want to see the Dane Tree or the Kimberleys, the Somme. You could spend a year in Australia and still have too much to see. It's nearly as big as America. People don't realize how big it is. And it's mainly bush or desert. There's only 23 million people in the size of America. So lots of distance to be traveled, lots of things to see. So
there's a reason Australia is called the lucky country. Well, Jason, I can't thank you enough for joining us on the Solari Report. This has been terrific. In the Dark, a great book. You're going to be seeing more about it on the Solari Report. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you again, Jason. Thank you. Have a great evening.
Thank you.